Well, it's a privilege of being together once more this evening. I want to take this time to thank you for hospitality that we've experienced, meals. Don and Mildred for opening their home. Appreciate that. May God bless you as a congregation. Appreciate that opening, Elvin. Two people you mentioned, Job and Noah, are people I was going to preach about mentioned in the message this evening. We'll get there somewhere along the way. And I believe us as parents, we all desire the best for our children. We would long to have their heart. We would desire that God's blessing would rest upon them, on their lives. Do we not? That is desire of our that we have. But I believe there's some very fundamental, basic things that need to be in place in our life to make our teaching and training at all effective. This evening I want to spend most of the time speaking on one of these things, and you might wonder what that is. There's a verse that in Proverbs 20, verse 7, that has been probably the most outstanding verse . It says, the just man walketh in his integrity, and his children are blessed after him. That verse to me has been like a guidepost for the rearing of my children. I think that is one of the most powerful verses that we have in the Bible as far as child training. You might think, well, hey, it doesn't really say that much. The just man walketh in his integrity, and his children are blessed after him. If we study that verse, there's an awful lot in that verse. And I want to take a look at that verse this evening. The importance of integrity. It implies that somehow, if there's integrity in a person's life, that there is a blessing that is connected that will go on to their children. And think about that this evening. It's very important. Many people put a lot of emphasis on doing, and I'm not trying to minimize doing, but this evening I want to focus on being probably more than doing. I think a lack of integrity will tend to undo instead of to reinforce what we're trying to do. It will undo what we're trying to teach our children if we lack integrity. You know, there's many examples. There's many stories out there and examples that we could turn to or that we could read about and give. And I found it interesting over the years that actually, as I came across some of those, to collect them. Because they'd always impressed me. How that you can have two people that are facing the same thing, basically, and yet you can have such vast different outcomes in the same situation. And I want to read here in the beginning just two little stories about two individuals that faced basically the same thing. In these stories, somewhere along the line, integrity is mentioned. Both of them faced financial difficulties, but they responded different. Why? I'll just read that at this time. These two stories come out of a book by, I think I mentioned before, Pathway Book, Honey from the Hive. First one is a little bit longer, and the second one is shorter. Now listen carefully, because I got a question for you when I'm finished reading this here. Fred was a conscientious young father. His wife Polly shared his convictions. Together they sought to bring up their young children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Both of them held high ideals for themselves as Christian parents. They realized it was not enough to give biblical teaching, nor is it enough to discipline the children and train them to be obedient. Fred and Polly knew they must also be good examples. To teach them Bible truth and then fail to live up to those truths themselves would be hypocrisy. Little did they realize how soon they would be put to the test. You see, Fred and Polly were having serious financial problems. Fred was not gifted in management. He had gone into debt to buy a property. Thus far, they had made little progress in paying off the mortgage. Money was constantly in short supply. So when word came that Polly's grandfather in a distant state was had passed away, they wished very much to go to the funeral. Could they afford to buy train tickets for the whole family? In those days, infants 2 years old and under could travel free with their parents. Between ages 2 and 6, the fare was half price. That meant the baby would cost nothing. But unfortunately, little Abby had just had a third birthday and Sammy had turned 7. The ticket agent was a man with a big smile. Fred told him where they wished to go, and the agent said, "You need one ticket for yourself, one for your wife," and he peered down at the boys, who were both small for their age, and concluded, "You need a half-fare ticket for the bigger boy, and the two little ones go free, right?" Fred gulped, then stammered, not really. The older boy is 7, and the two is, and the younger is 3. "Is that so? You could have saved yourself a fair bit of money by letting me think they were 2 and 6. I would never have known the difference." By this time, Fred had recovered himself. "You wouldn't have known the difference," he admitted, "but the boys would have known it. Fred had done the right thing. What effect would it have had on the two boys if they had seen their father take advantage of the ticket agent? The seed thus sown would have surely brought a bitter harvest. Few things are more damaging to a child's character than seeing hypocrisy in the lives of their parents. All their good teaching would have meant nothing if dad and mother were openly disobedient. If the parents were lukewarm Christians, if they lack integrity or fail to keep their word, if they are selfish and deceitful, we can be sure the children will detect it. Let's go to the other story. The farmer had brought a truckload of wheat to the elevator to sell. He knew the procedure. He must drive on the scales to be weighed, then go unload his wheat. Once that had been done, he would pass over the scale again to weigh the empty truck. That way the miller would know how many bushels of wheat to pay him for. On that day, the farmer was in a foul mood. The price of wheat was down, he had debts to pay, and the wheat would hardly bring enough income to pay all that he owed others. A sudden temptation seized the farmer. He got out of the truck, but instead of stepping clear of the scales, he remained standing beside the truck, thinking the miller would never see him. The farmer failed to realize that there was a mirror on the wall, and the miller could see him in the mirror. After he had unloaded, the farmer came back to weigh the empty truck. This time, he stepped clear of the scales. Then he went over to the miller to receive his payment. The miller's face was grim. "You know that you just sold yourself for $10.05, he asked the farmer. "Don't you think that was pretty cheap?" The farmer turned red with embarrassment. The miller was right. He had indeed sold himself much too cheaply. Surely his reputation and his integrity were worth far more than the $10 that he... How could he have made such a grave mistake? Now, it doesn't tell us that the miller had any children, but if he did have children, like Fred and Polly did, which of these two parents had the best chance that their children would turn out right? You know, it's pretty obvious. It is the one that had integrity would have stood the best chance. Integrity is very important. If we lack integrity, or if there's any other major character flaws that we have, it can easily cancel out anything good that we're trying to train our children. Let's take a look at this here verse. Proverbs 20, verse 7. What does it tell us? What can we learn from this verse? I better learn something. If it has something to do with passing a blessing being passed on to the children, then we want to learn all that we can what that really means. What is integrity? It means wholeness or completeness. You know, probably Mildred don't have a rotten apple in her refrigerator, but if I would have brought an apple that is just really bad, we'd say it lacks integrity. But if there's one that's really perfect and good-looking, that's a fruit that has integrity. It's entire. It's whole. Without blemish. It's the same word back in the Exodus when they were supposed to get a lamb for the Passover. It says a lamb without blemish, or in other words, a lamb that had integrity. It was whole. There was nothing wrong with it. And that's how we should be on the inside. We should be people that are whole, without blemish and undefiled. Now, I know we can't be perfect, but we should strive toward that. Think about the wheat farmer. There was some internal blemish somewhere inside of him. He wasn't whole. You know, that wheat farmer, if he had children somewhere, they were being robbed of a blessing. It's that simple, I believe. He was setting himself up to lose the hearts of his children. Well, let's take a closer look here what integrity is. As I studied that word and Strong's and tried to make some comparisons, it means complete honesty. Not trying to hide anything. Being total transparent. Like Fred, you know, even if it cost him something financially, he was honest there with the ticket agent. It means complete innocence. We can turn to Genesis chapter 20, and I'll just do that briefly. About Abimelech, I think I touched on that this morning. Abraham and Sarah, or Abraham, they lied there to him. What does it say? Abimelech must have been a godly man. It tells us in Genesis 20, verse 5 and 6, kind of breaking into the conversation here, and said he not unto me, she is my sister, and she is herself said, he is my brother. In the integrity of my heart and innocency of my hands have I done this. And God said unto him in a dream, yea, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thine heart. So Abimelech, he must have been a man of integrity, and he was totally innocent. That's part of integrity, being innocent, clear, blameless, clear before God. Complete truthfulness. Now, I want to spend a little bit more time here on this one. I learned something new in my studies that I hadn't known before. Well, truthfulness is being as good as our word. We know that. Promises, our vows, things that we make. But back at the time when the high priest, they had this here breastplate on them. Oh, there's quite a number of scriptures. I'll just read one of them. I think the first one that appears in the Bible. Exodus 28, verse 30. It says, and thou shalt put in the breastplate of judgment the Urim and the Thummim. I always wondered what that was, and I'm still not sure. They had something there, but these were two things that were like an emblem of something that had a different meaning. The one of them meant, you can look this up for yourselves, it closely tied with the word integrity. It actually means total truthfulness. That's what it meant. That's what that one, I don't know, was it a stone or what that was? An emblem of complete truth. The other one, I think, if I have it right, it stood for light. Truthfulness. God is a God of truth. That was important that the priest had that on his breastplate. Symbol of being truthful. We as followers of God should endeavor to be people that are totally truthful. Now, I'm going to get pretty practical. Come right home with what I believe some of these things mean. You know, it talks about truthfulness as being as good as our word. The vows that we make. We have scriptures in the Bible. There's one in Deuteronomy and there's one in Ecclesiastes. I'll just read the one in Ecclesiastes that says, the thing of making vows. It says in Ecclesiastes 5 verse 4, when thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he shall have no pleasure in fools. Pay that which thou hast vowed. Better it is that thou shouldest not vow than that thou shouldest vow and not pay. Suffer not thy mouth to cause thy flesh to sin. How far does integrity reach? To what extent does it go? You know, we make vows. Some of us, we've made vows, numerous vows. We make vows, baptismal vows. We say something like this: Are you truly sorry for all your past sins? Are you willing to renounce Satan, the world, and all the works of darkness, and your own carnal will and selfish desires? And we say, I am. And we go on, we say, do you promise by the grace of God and the aid of the Holy Spirit to submit yourself to Christ and His Word and faithfully abide in death until the same? And we say, I do. Okay, that's a vow we've made. If anywhere along the line we decide that we're going to do elsewhere, we're not totally truthful. My understanding is that something enters in there and we'd have to admit that we lack a certain level of integrity. If that happens, we make other vows, those of us that are married. How can I reduce this so I don't... I'll just say this, to the groom, it says, will you in the presence of God and these witnesses take, you know, the sister by your side to be your wedded wife? Will you love and cherish her, provide and care for her in health and in sickness and prosperity and adversity, exercise patience, kindness, forbearance toward her, live with her in peace, as becometh a faithful Christian husband, and forsaking all others, keep yourself only unto her as long as you both shall live? And you say, I will, and then we gets turned around and the other one is asked, what happens as life goes on and we're not true to those vows? That's an indication that there's a lack of integrity, is it not? We've made a promise. Is that being too plain? Oh, I don't think it is. Can we expect our children to be blessed after us if we are not as good as our word? You know, we need to strive to be men and women of integrity, to be as true to our vows as we can, to alleviate in our homes strife and tension, things like that that would hinder Well, we're on the subject of marriage. Vows and integrity and complete truthfulness. My mind goes to Noah. Noah and his wife. What can we learn from him? If we'd go back there to what Elvin referred to, I've often been challenged there in Genesis chapter 6. It says that he was, in verse 9, it says, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. The word perfect, I understand, also is tied in and is part of the definition of integrity. So he was a man of integrity, we could say. He had the hearts of his children, and he had, somehow, he had done something right. All his family went into the ark. I've often wondered, what did he do to make that happen? They did something right. Especially when we consider, like Elvin said, the conditions that they were living in at the moment. What were those conditions like? It tells us very clearly. Verse 5, and God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of the heart were only evil continually. Then it goes on to say, verse 11, the earth was also corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupted, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And it just goes on and on. It mentions corruption, violence, numerous different times, wickedness. And yet, in spite of that, somehow Noah and his wife, they got their, appears like all of their family, into the ark. It says in chapter 7, verse 1, and the Lord said to him, come thou and all thy house into the ark. How did he do it? Well, he was a man of integrity. His life, somehow his family was preserved. The Bible doesn't say much what he did. It doesn't say a lot about his methods, about his teaching, or his training program, but it does speak about his life and his example and his integrity. And his sons were not small at this time. They were growing men. Somehow in the growing up process there, they did not you know, latch on to the surrounding influences. Somehow he was able, Noah, to keep their hearts. I don't know how he did it. But we are told in, we have a few verses in the Bible that tell us, and I think this played into it, that integrity has preserving qualities. In Psalm 25, 21, it says, "Let integrity and uprightness preserve me." And then there's that verse in Proverbs 2, verse 7, where it says, "He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly." Uprightly is the same, goes right back to the same Hebrew word as integrity. He is a buckler. Buckler means a shield and protection. I think there is some degree or level of protection that is of divine protection that is absent if we lack integrity. I think it is. But Noah was a man of integrity, and somehow I think that played into all of that. I believe even Noah's wife was a woman of integrity. We don't even know her name, but there's one thing that kind of has impressed me, and I don't know whether this is important or not, but I'm going to mention it anyway, is that I like what I see in that story of Noah. We can read that when they went into the ark, Noah went first. He always led the way, and his wife came behind him. When it was time to come out of the ark, he came out first, and his wife came behind him. Well, let's just look at, maybe not read all of it, but let's just see. There's one verse we could look at. That is verse 7. "And Noah went in, and his sons, and his wife, and his sons' wives into the ark." And it mentions that a few different times. Somehow I like that picture that he led the way, she came along behind and supported him. Thinking more about vows, marriage vows, they are so important. You know, if there is unfaithfulness, there is strife, if there's unkindness, lack of peace in our marriage, we're not as good as our marriage vows. We're not totally truthful, and we lack integrity. And there is a certain level of blessing that ceases to flow from our children. I know that sounds harsh, but I believe that's what the Bible teaches. Then we make church membership vows. We say something like this. We're asked, "Do you confess to be of one mind with us, to be subject to the teachings and standards of this congregation?" And we say, "Yeah." What if somewhere along the line we decide to do something else, and we don't do that? You know, I'm just saying this to cause us to think about the seriousness and how far integrity and truthfulness really reaches. When there is cheerful submission, when one's power and influence is used to build up the church, when there's a willingness to participate and work through which the responsibilities that are laid upon us, that's total truthfulness to our commitments. It's an indication of integrity. But the other side of that is also true. Should someone, after making those vows to support the church, build the church, find themselves resisting and opposing, pushing the lines, a person may not be aware of it, of the connection between such activity and how it can affect the next generation. You know, that's serious. I've concluded that lack of integrity either equals loss of blessing to our children. I think we can say that. I'm going to skip over a little bit of this here. Integrity is a personal matter. It says here in, back to our key or theme verse there, "The just man walketh in his integrity." You know that story of Fred there, it was personal with him. His integrity. Psalm 26:11, "For I have walked in mine integrity," David says. It is a personal possession. It is valuable, so valuable. If we have integrity, Proverbs 19:1 says, "Better is the poor that walks in his integrity than he that is perverse and with his in his lips and is a fool. You know, you take the story of Fred there being not so well off, and yet he was rich because he had integrity. I like what Job says when, and we're responsible. That's a personal responsibility and accountability, whether we're men or women of integrity. Job says in Job 31, verse 6, tremendous testimony. He's saying, as it were, well, I'll just read the verse first. Let me be weighed in an even balance, that God may know mine integrity. He's saying, in my own words, I'm not afraid to step on to the scales of God to see how I pan out, see how I read out. I'm not afraid. He's saying, you know, if there be a scales that would weigh integrity, he's saying, let me be weighed in an even balance that God may know mine integrity. Evidently, he was totally transparent and he was honest and he wasn't afraid to have God examine him. We should be like that as near as we can. Progressive integrity is a progressive matter. It says here, the just man walketh in his integrity. Walking. Quite a number of times in Scripture when integrity is mentioned, it talks about walking. Psalm 26:11, I will walk in mine integrity. 1 Kings 9:4, Solomon says, if thou walk before me as David thy father walked in the integrity of heart. Walk suggests movement. Going somewhere, advancing. We're all going somewhere in life. I'd like to ask you, where are you going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 30 years from now in this matter? Not geographically, but what will people say of you? Will they say, now there's a man or a woman of integrity? You get there a step at a time. Would to God that each one of us could be said, like it was said of Job, as thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, perfect man and upright, one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still holdeth fast his integrity. How will we fare in the tests of life? Will we have integrity? You know, it's a hard issue. Integrity is like it will help us. It's like a guide or like a compass. In Proverbs 11, verse 3, the integrity of the upright shall guide him. Think of the wheat farmer. If he continued to lack integrity as he goes through life, he, in that case, and then next week it's that, he's going to, after a while, be going into a direction that he doesn't want to go. The other side thing is also true of Fred. As he makes wise decisions according to God and exercises integrity, after a while, you know, he's going to keep on going in the right direction. That's what we want to do. To go in the right direction. How does this look like in real life? You know, we talk about integrity and it is so important. How does it look in real life? Simon Trock has a book out on integrity, and I think it's a good book. I'm going to read something out of here. I don't know how much preachers should read out of books when they preach, but I think this time, if I break the rules, you'll have to forgive me. But this is very practical. This is a case where, yeah. I'll just read this section out of here, and then I'll also have a few questions at the end of this here. Suppose John, a church member, has an old clunker of a car with 250,000 miles and some rather noticeable pings in the engine. It uses so much oil that there's no point in changing it. Because he doesn't want to spend money on repairs, he decides to get rid of it. He has two options. Tell the truth about the car and accept a just and fair price for it, or do a few cover-up cosmetics and get a several hundred more out of it. The cover-up won't cost much, and it may yield some dollars. Several cans of STP motor additive might quiet the ping and reduce the blue smoke when the potential driver starts it up. If he sells it in the next 60 days, he can get it off his hands before the next inspection is due. Let's say he chooses option two. That option comes easily because he remembers playing in the neighbor's barn when his father and grandfather sacked wheat they were buying. He heard Grandpa explain that if they round it up as high as it goes, after a while they will get a bushel free. So in goes the STP. The ping is noticeably quiet. If one container can help, two should be better. It cleans it up. He cleans it up, notices the 56,000 miles on the odometer for the third time, puts it by the road with a for sale sign that says, "Runs good." His potential customer stops and looks. "How's the engine?" "Runs good." "Use oil?" "A little." "Actual mileage?" "Yep." "Well, actually turned over once." As the inquirer drives away to take it for a spin, John smiles himself. "The engine sounds pretty quiet. It doesn't smoke much. I'm going to ask $400 for it. That's pretty good, considering I'd have to pay $50 to have it haul it off if the engine blew. Now comes the dealing. "What's your price?" $400. "Can't afford that." "How about $300? $350, says John. "It's a deal." The next Sunday, John and his family are at his brother's house for Sunday dinner. While they wait for the call to gather at the table, John tells about the car deal. The STP quieted the engine right down. The guy asked about the mileage. I told him it turned over once. He didn't ask any more about it. I got $350 out of the old clunker. As this foreign-speaking guy drove off, I stuffed the money in my pocket and thought, "Good riddance. I hope I see neither again." Me and STP pulled a good one. John is joined by a few others with a good chuckle. I'll tell you, we could be training our children without even being aware of it. Just then, dinner was ready. The families with their children gathered around the table. Mashed potatoes, roast beef, gravy, fresh baked dinner rolls, fresh iced tea with strawberry pie on the counter for dessert. "John, would you please return thanks?" "Heavenly Father, we thank thee." "Wait a minute. What's going on here?" "God saw the whole deal. He saw one of his people from a foreign land being ripped off. He heard the laughter about the deal. He got no delight out of the deal or the story. Will he now get delight out of a prayer? Go ahead and say it and stuff yourselves, but God is not delighted." On the other hand, let's suppose John took option one. Tell the truth, take a fair price. He gets out all his belongings, tossing most of them into the trash, then sweeps out the dirt. Doesn't look too bad. Lots of good memories. "It did a good job climbing Pike's Peak, took us over to the West Coast, not a stitch of trouble. The sign says, 'For sale as is, make offer.' A young fellow speaking broken English stops by. Not much money. Need a car to get to my job. Have wife and baby. Will it take me to my work? It's seen its better days. It does have 250,000 miles on it. Uses oil, has a ping in the engine, as you can hear. I think it will run a while to get you to work and back. It might pass inspection if you put an additive in the oil. STP might help. Can't guarantee it." The little fellow smiles. "You think it'll get me to my job and back? You take $100 for it?" John thinks, "Suppose the engine blew up and this guy would be stuck." Then he says, "Actually, it has a good set of tires that are worth something. I'll take $50 for it. If you have any real problems with it, let me know." A shocked young man hands over $320. John leafed through his bills, in his wallet till he finds a 10. The happy young fellow smiles as he takes the 10 and extra set of keys. Then his smile gets broader as they shake hands. "Thank you. My name is Jose. Tell me, I'm not used to this kind of way of dealing. Why did you tell me that the engine is about the engine noise? Why didn't you add the STP? That's the way many of my friends do. You could have gotten more money." John hesitates slightly, then replies, "I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, a Christian. My guidebook teaches me that we should provide things honest in the sight of all men. We should walk honestly, decently, behave properly, and put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provisions for the flesh. The Bible teaches that we should walk honestly toward them that are without. It also says, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are honest. These are the things that I should think about. I sure hope you get $50 worth of driving out of the car." Jose drives off, leaving a trail of smoke as he goes. John goes back to mowing grass and prays, "God, let this car run for this fellow. I pray that he will experience the spirit of truth in his heart." Weeks later, he sees the old car in town, and the driver gives him a hearty wave. That's the kind of deal that delights God. That is the kind of transaction that brings worship to God. When you make this kind of deal, God is honored. It has 250,000 miles on it. It has a noise in the engine. STP may help. I can't guarantee it. I'll take $50 for it. That's the delightful language of worship to God. Now, if this John had children, which it appears like he might have in that story, how effective would his child training methods have been if he would have chose that first option? Not very. On the other hand, what child training endeavors would not have been greatly enhanced by such integrity and honesty and the blessing of God? You know, I think that verse there, "The just man walks in his integrity, and his children are blessed after him," is so true. There's so much in that verse. Now, I don't know. I've not focused a lot on doing, but I think we should. We need to be doing. I'm not minimizing that. There's a lot that needs to be said along those lines. But I think this here is also very important. I'm still not sure if you're convinced. Let me tell you another little story that I hope will convince you. I like this story because it proves a real, real strong point. It's also about integrity. A strange dog came to a preacher's house, and his three sons soon became quite fond of it. It so happened that there were three white hairs in the animal's tail. One day an advertisement was in the newspaper about a lost dog which fit the description perfectly. "In the presence of my three boys," said the minister, "we carefully separated the three white hairs and removed them. The real owner discovered where the straying canine had found a home and came to claim him. Because the dog showed every sign of recognition, the man was ready to take him away." Quickly, the minister spoke up. "Didn't you say the dog would be known by three white hairs in the tail?" The owner, unable to find the identifying feature, was forced to leave. The minister later said, "We kept the dog, but I lost my three boys for Christ." His sons no longer had confidence in what he professed. He had not practiced what he preached. He lacked integrity. You know, let's be men and women of integrity, that somehow the divine blessing can flow on to our children. So much for integrity. I was going to say something this morning yet about being keepers at home. I'm going to say that here in closing. And this is geared especially to the young moms. And Titus 2:5, among other things, it says that the older women are supposed to teach the younger women to be keepers at home, stayers at home, domestically inclined. I don't know if that's a problem here for you or not, but yeah. There's a few things that I'm not going to take the time, but we could go back. Well, yeah, maybe I will. Exodus chapter 2. I'm going to read that account. The reason I want to read that is to emphasize to you as young mothers the importance of being there, being at home with your young children. We have the account here of Moses' mother, and she was able to keep Moses for, it appears like, well, I'm not sure exactly how long, probably not too long, but she knew that she had just a short time, and she made the best use of that time. Exodus 2, 1 to 10. There was a man of the house of Levi and took to wife a daughter of Levi. The woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could not longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and dabbed it with slime and with pitch to put the child therein, and she laid it by the flags by the river brink. And his sister stood afar off to wit what would be done to him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to the river, came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along by the river's side, and when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it, and when she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call for thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Go." And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages." And the woman took the child and nursed it, and the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses. And she said, "Because I drew him out of the water." So she just had a short time. We could go to 1 Samuel. It's a similar account in 1 Samuel 1 and about Hannah. And she had Samuel, and she had him for a short time. And then she lent him to the Lord, brought him to the temple. Young mothers, you have a short time to instill the values in your children. Research shows that 50% of a child's basic attitudes are learned during the first 3 years of their life. 50% of their basic attitudes. Not sure how they get that. Also, I'm told that 50% of an individual's intellectual development takes place between ages 4 and 6. Let's help our school teachers out by giving our children their proper attention when they're young. Why do we bring this up? It is so important for mothers to be at home with their children, keepers at home. Satan also knows that. He does, and he doesn't like that. Mothers, I want to encourage you and remind you how important homemaking is. It is such a vital part of the training and the rearing and the nurturing of your children. I know how it is. I know too well, because I remember back, my wife, she would have kind of had the same sentiment that came through sometimes. Like, you know, you hear messages, topics, discussions about kingdom work, and might be a sense of guilt. It's like, you know, I'm not doing anything but just changing diapers and meals and cleaning, that's all I get done. Don't despair. Just Don't let Satan put those kind of thoughts in your head. Those are totally, totally unfounded. If you are involved in the raising of your children, and that's all you get done, if you can, in spite of that, or along with that, create a cheerful, happy setting and atmosphere in your home, you've accomplished a lot. That's a noble, noble calling. Your influence has eternal implications. Don't despair. Homemaking is kingdom work. It is. Just don't get the idea in your head that if you'd be out there doing the more important thing, that's not how it works. Forget it. I have a few things I'd like to read yet, closing here, about mothers. And this first thing has to do a little bit about daycare centers, and I hope nobody has ever attempted to put their children out in daycare centers. But just, I want to read a little bit to show how important mothering is. Contrary to modern thought, homemaking is not a dull, servile work of lower intelligent women. It is a full-time, lifetime responsibility which demands creativity, intelligence, and management skills of the highest caliber. The womanhood of a wife is in many ways the heart of the home. That's true. And as such is the fulfillment of her husband. And the career-minded woman leaves a void both in the home and in her husband which nothing can replace. Now, a little bit about child or daycares. About 50% of the mothers of preschool children in the U.S. have jobs. Imagine. The result is that little ones are being trundled out of the house at increasingly early ages to daycare centers. Many experts have tried to assure parents that such centers are designed to meet the needs of the children and that children can easily adapt to changes and new environments. The following observations, however, should direct Christian parents to other conclusions. And I'd give three, but I would just take the time to talk about one. Daycare centers decrease a child's attachment to their natural parents. The head of Harvard Preschool Project, which researched preschool care for more than 30 years, said he would not think of placing his infant or toddler in any substitute care program. Wisely, he warned, babies form their first human attachments only once. Make sure you're the one where that gets attached to and not somebody else. It concludes then with this here little paragraph. This is not to say that all who provide substitute care are doing a poor job. Many are doing their best. It is simply to recognize the realities of substitute care and to say that their best cannot replace the parents. There's nothing that can replace the parents. And what I have to read here, the next little thing is, would kind of verify that. And I'm not sure where I got that, but it's sort of interesting what it says. Children come home. Perhaps they have been away with dad, or they go out to the woods playing, or maybe it is an older child coming home from work. They step into the door. The clock ticks, the refrigerator hums. There are cookies in the cookie jar, but something feels different. The first question that comes to their mind is, where's mom? They go and search for her upstairs, in the basement, in the bedroom, in the barn, in the shop, in the garden. When they find her, they say, Mom, we've been looking all over for you. Mom replies, I've just been out here getting rid of some of the weeds. Do you need anything? They say, No, we just wondered where you were. The children do not need something. They need mom. They want her presence in the house. When they come home, when they eat their cookies, they want to talk about things that are important and things that are not important. The child's first love is his mother. There is a God-made bond between them. This bond draws a child to his mother, whether she is godly or wicked. and whether she loves him or not. A mother will influence her child. She has a powerful influence on him. God made it that way. It's a big advantage. You know, you need to make good use of that opportunity. So I'd like to encourage you mothers, take heart, take courage. Your involvement with your younger children has a lot to do with the overall picture of child training. And it's not just being a mother and being in the home. It's, I know there are times, we've had enough of children and I've been around the block a time or two to realize that there can be times that, you know, children can be a lot of work. Children can be a great blessing as well. So just be content to be keepers at home. I want to give this one warning, and it is possible, and I've seen it though, that women can be keepers at home. They're there in body, but they're not really there. I've heard of a case where, it's possible to be in the home and yet be so preoccupied. I've known of a case where there was someone that just, they love to read and that's all, and just ignore the children because, or there's other things that you can do. Be at home, be a keeper at home and be there. Focus on the children. Give them your attention. Give them what they need. Don't ignore them in the process. Other things aren't as important. So I trust that this time together has been an encouragement in some way. Like I said at the beginning there, I had a sermon that I would have liked to share on love and discipline. Maybe your ministers can meet that challenge. There's a lot to say on that particular subject. There's an awful lot in the Bible about that. And I think it's an important subject that sometime needs to be addressed. But let's endeavor to, we need to be concerned about methods and details. But I think even more important is that we have of who we are, or just as important, I should say. Let's make sure that our marriages are the way they should be, functioning properly, that we're men and women of integrity, and that we take time for our children. Some of those things, I believe, are just as important as being so concerned about every little detail. Some of those things will kind of fall in place as we go along. Let's kneel for prayer.